New Rio, Robert Smith. Robert Smith, Rio. Robert Smith, this is Channel 1 Right. This is Channel 1 Right. And this is the New Rio, Robert Smith. This is New Rio, Robert Smith. New Rio, this is Channel 1 Right. This is Channel 1 Right. This is New Rio, Robert Smith. This is Channel 1 Right. Tuesday, 11th March, 1969. Tuesday, 11th March, 1969. Tuesday, 11th March, 1969.
Mr. Miles, how are you, John Scott?
Your telephone customer is back, yeah.
You're welcome. There it is. Help yourself.
How's the weather?
I don't want any more wind, guys. I don't want any more cold either.
I've been out of seed twice now, and I have to get just a little more. They're about knocking around over there in the swamp. I never got out of over in there.
Started to some people think that that's going to go dry. I've seen it dry for 4 years. It'll go dry in the evening. It'll go dry. You start out at 3 o'clock this afternoon, you dry by 7 o'clock at night.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it'll go out with a roar that you can hear all the way.
Have you heard it go dry?
I never. Someday up there by the morning, the pressure on the top will get heavier, more pressure on top of the roof underneath.
Hey, guy in the other room where it's warmer for you.
Yes, sir.
Boy?
Yes, sir.
We're going in there where it's warmer.
Did you pull it?
Yes, but let's pull that.
Okay. Years ago, they tried to drain it to grow vegetables.
Yeah.
They did marry the Pescuella Drainage Commission. And Mary and Simonson and old man Herlong, I think, had something to do with it. Much. He talked an awful lot. Of course, all the Herlongs are good. They put well with your tenant and they trash it past you clogged up. I think they're still clogged up. And the ones over there where they had their two, they got clogged up. And they had a lot of, they were growing things over there, and the drainage wells got clogged up, weren't taking anything out. Well, they had a rain here, one heavy rain, and they had cucumbers and squash and everything out in there, and it was, they were growing up a storm. And the wells clogged up, and the doggone water came back in the lake. Now, they had a ditch dug, a canal dug for Otter Creek, which comes out over through there, comes down through the hills, and comes through there, and comes into this lake over on the other side. You can see it over there on that other road.
Oh, the bridge.
Oh. And, but that creek was had a canal all the way through. And to these two wells, and they had a sort of a copper dam there for the water, and the wells would take it off. So this water came in this day, and the next morning when they got up, why, there were the cucumbers were all floating on top of the water, and they went out there and tried to salvage what they could in rowboats. Well, it stayed full for a number of years, stayed right up there. And they couldn't do anything with it because the wells were clogged, and the only well that would take it off would be this one surplus well over here at Thrasher's, that's up here by this little old house on the road over here.
Uh-huh.
And far up there I could show you where it is, but there are three of them up in there. And one Sunday afternoon about 2 o'clock, right up there where those wells are, the limestone sink formed, and about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the water started with a roar, and the water all went out—fish, and everything ran out of there, and it was dry. Well, it was dry for several years. And then the water pressure underneath the ground built up to such an extent that it equalized the pressure on the surface, so that water in the lake stayed up. Well, they built, then it went out again. And I was here then, about the second time, it went dry. And I was trying to sell this property that Connell and they bought from Harry Evans. I was trying to sell it for Miss Mary. And so, it being dry and no lake there, people said, well, if you could control the water and have a lake there, that they could they'd buy it and they would use it for a pleasure resort and build houses around there. Mm-hmm. Well, they hired a hydraulic engineer up at the university. I've forgotten his name now. I think it began with B. He came down here and talked to me about it. He started talking about the creek, Otter Creek, dumping into there and this canal and this little old copper dam that had been there. It's all rotted away, fallen down. But you could see where it had been, and this limestone sink. Well, if you put a dam across where the sink was and put a sluice in there so you could control the water, you could keep the water at a certain height so it couldn't go out of that limestone sink, and you could keep the lake full. Mm-hmm. But this fellow up here wanted to know how much water would come through there, what the width of that canal was, what the depth was, and would maybe put a point gauge in there and get a reading on it. And so I said, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll make a survey of it. I mean, just a visual survey. And every 100 feet or so, I'll take a measurement, and I'll put it down on a piece of paper, and when we get together again, and you can figure out, and you'll take a point gauge over there at Otter Creek, and we can put a sluice in there, and you can probably figure out what your water is, or approximately what it is. Now, you can't tell what it is when you have a lot of water.
Is Otter Creek way over in that far corner? You can't see it, pick it.
Yeah.
Black smoke.
Good ways over there, Robert. From here. I just looked over there.
But you'd have to go along the road over there to see where Otter Creek is.
Yeah.
Is it too cold in here for you?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
I put the heater on so I can get warm in here. I gotta stand up for a minute or two, if you don't mind. Went over there. There was one pool of water over there in Billy Richardson's, way over by the pasture dummies over in there. There's a pool of water over there, I'd say it covered about, two and a half acres. And I walked, and Otter Creek was dumping some water into that. It was seeping in there. So I walked that canal all the way over to that limestone sink. The limestone sink is over here, about 100 yards this way from where you see Denton's pasture there.
Yeah.
There's a woods, there's Denton's clear pasture coming down the lake.
Yeah.
And then there's a woods there, well, about 100 yards north of that woods is where the limestone sink is.
Mm-hmm.
And I was measuring and going along, guy, and I walked in there, and here I came to a place where the wall was 10 or 12 feet high and it's round. And here I was in the center, and what made me stop was I was going up and down like that. Just like you go on ice, you know, tickly bender on ice. And is your car running? Your car running?
I'm over there.
No, it's a darn old telephone company, electric light company. Anyway, I was scared. I hadn't told anybody I was going in there to do all these things, and I was in there all alone, and the weeds were 10 feet high. You couldn't see anywhere. The only place that I could walk was in this canal, because the whole lake bed was covered with weeds. Like,
yeah.
I say, it was about 10 feet high, coffee weed and things way up there. Here I was all alone in there, afraid to back up, afraid to go ahead. In that damn wall, and that floor going down like that. Jesus. Well, darn old shivers went up my back, and I mind dying, but I hate like the devil to fall down there, God knows how many feet, you know, and just starve to death or drown or something down in that way. Nobody knows where the devil you went, you know. So I happened to stood there, and I was afraid to move, and I looked around, and here I could see where these cows had walked. A cow had walked. I said, well, you big damn fool, if a cow will hold a cow up, it'll hold you up. So I very cautiously moved, and I put my foot over here like this where that cow had. I could see a cow track. And then I'd look around, and I'd find another cow track, and I put my other foot on that cow track. I kept that up till I got to the wall, and then I climbed up the wall. When I got up on top that wall, that was a hard job. I'll bet you it took me a time, like it felt like 20 days, but it was about 20 minutes, I guess. I got up on top of that bank. I laid down there, God, I was all in. I wasn't nothing. I was just nervously exhausted, physically nervously exhausted, more nervously than anything else. I just laid there and said, well, never again, even being a damn fool once too often. So when this fella asked me about it, I told him what I knew, and he said something more about it. I said, the hell with it. I said, I'm not going to bother anymore with it. I had enough of that thing. I said, if somebody wants to buy it and do it and go and measure it and do all of it, crap that has to be done with it, let them do it. But as far as I'm concerned, I'm through, no more. He said, what's the matter with you? I said, I darn it got killed in that limestone sink. He said, you didn't walk in there. I said, the hell I didn't. I walked across it. He said, well, I don't blame you for feeling the way you do. I think he's since gone up to Georgia Tech or Auburn. I'm not sure, somewhere up there. But, that whole thing figured out that to regulate and everything else would cost too much money, and they didn't want to do it, and there was a problem where they wouldn't. Well, then the water started to come back, and the limestone roof held and has held up to this day. And the fish came back, and where they came from, nobody knows. And then when they put I-75 through there, they dumped a lot of water from that prairie over there, came through and broke through into Tuscarora. So you've got a lot of water back here.
Yeah.
See, this old road that comes down through here, then I-75 is going up through here.
Yeah.
All of this part back in here is a swamp.
Yeah.
This is all swampy. And it broke through here and came into Lake Tuscarora. Lake Tuscarora comes around like that, comes out here.
Mm-hmm.
And this is that road go down by Denton's.
Yeah.
Well, all of this back in here was, this is the old T&J Railroad trestle came across here.
Yeah.
And this is all swamp back in there.
Yeah.
Back in where Ernest and Bob Denton and other people lived, that swampy. And all this water, my 75, was dumped into here and it broke through and came into Lake Tuscarora. So now you can go over there and you can catch perch and brim and shellcracker around Tuscarora, which you never could before. You can catch bass, but you couldn't catch those fish. They came out of this swampy lake over here. I can't think of the name. They call it some prairie or something over there.
But isn't that over there on the Simon's Ranch?
No, it's west over here.
Oh,
west.
Oh.
This is the north end of Lake Tuscarora. This is. Now, a lot of people don't know this. I didn't know it. See all these lots in here?
Yeah.
That's all those lots in there along Lake Tuscaloosa as you go up this road here.
Yeah.
That Connell, that Judge Connell and somebody else, well, Connell really, has divided this all up and made it into lots.
Yeah.
But people don't know that. Harry Evans cut this up and made this into lots. Mm-hmm. This is where Old Man Sapp lives. This is where that old Mary house is and the trailer park down in here.
Oh.
And you're...
Where is the Baptist church?
The old Baptist church?
Yeah,
right
way
there.
Over there.
Right here. Mm-hmm. That's where the old Baptist church is.
Yeah.
Birch's garage is right there.
Yeah.
But you go straight back here. Bars live right in there.
Yeah. Right there, that dog leg.
Yeah. That's where bars live.
Mm-hmm. And that's the house that...
this is the house where Mary lives.
Doc Evans lives?
Used to live, yeah.
And that's the Mary house?
Yeah, it's the old Mary house. Sapps from Ohio live here. This piece, this B piece that belonged to old man Sapp, there's a little cottage in the corner.
Yes. Well, I didn't know where they live.
They came from Ohio.
I never seen him.
Apple, he's a real old, real short guy, real old. This red stuff here I marked out belonged to Jimmy Daly, Dr. Daly over in Williston.
Mm-hmm.
And a real estate broker over there wanted me to appraise it. I said, I'll talk to you about it, but I'm not going to go up there and appraise it. They wanted me to appraise it for nothing.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't going about to do it, and I wasn't going to get implicated. And he came over here, and he's been promised me every Friday he'd come back and tell me how much they wanted. Is this too hot?
No.
I'm turning it on.
No.
How much they wanted for it, but he hadn't been back yet. He didn't tell me which Friday. He owns a lot over here, too. You come down Highway 441, and that mini mart or laundromat thing is, he owns a lot of stuff in here.
Robert's on that floating cucumbers over there where I am, down there in what I call the flats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's underwater a lot of times. And Ben Wright was over there helping me one day, and he said the last time he was over there, he had cultivated that they had cabbage all out in there, and the water came up and covered it. And they hadn't planted back since. Now, how long that is, I don't know. That'd go right smart back.
Well, guys, since we've lived here, I mean, in the last 20 years, less than 20 years, I have seen Lake Tuscaloosa clean over this highway down here.
Yeah.
The old highway.
Yeah.
The old highway. Clean over.
Yeah.
Down here, right where the road.
Mm-hmm.
And it's come over the highway since the new highway's been here, but just a little bit. But I've seen it real deep down there. You couldn't get through there at all.
Mm-hmm.
The old highway was there. But, of course, Fish Prairie and your pond together, if you had a hurricane or had a high water table, sure, that would float out. But that lake that you have over there, I don't think that lake part has ever gone dry, has it?
No, not since I've been there.
I mean, even previously to that.
There's some sort of deep pools in there.
Sure there are, and it wouldn't all go dry. It might go dry between the lake and fish. And they could grow cabbage in there, but honestly, I don't believe that lake, I don't ever remember that lake going dry.
I guess when it's dry or nearly dry, you figure, well, you can go ahead and plant something there. But you know, once it starts to rain, Roberts, if it keeps on raining, that don't take, after the ground gets wet, you see. It doesn't take long.
Take long to fill that up.
Keep coming on up there.
Because you got a spring up there too. Was a spring up there somewhere near where what's the name had the trailer, unless you fill it in. I saw him and his wife this morning. His wife, he's been rushing around. His head cut off. He hadn't made any money in the last 2 months, I understand.
Too much to do. You know, that's the hell out of it is, you know, you're probably getting much to do. You got no time to take a limit.
He's been down to Orlando, and I meant to ask him for one of those invitations to that thing, gallery thing, this new thing just came out.
Mm-hmm.
I called up, and some people who were members told me on the phone that they had dropped their membership and weren't coming out here again because they got some literature from there that was so obscene that they didn't want a damn thing to do with it.
All right.
And they're pretty broad-minded, pretty liberal people. Shoot. Of course, I hear it all the time. They arrest the guy up there on University Avenue for selling pornography or obscene literature, and yet Holbrook have exhibitions of lesbians or up at the University Art Gallery. One's art and one's pornography.
You get into the art world and you don't know what you'll get into. I believe I prefer the cattle world, the vegetable world. That's bad enough, isn't it? Problems.
Of course, years ago, Guy, when I was in the interior decorating business, and Ruth had studied art there in Philadelphia School of Design for Women, that's similar to Pratt Institute. And I knew quite a number of very fine artists. It's different, entirely different. I mean, you didn't have all this sex stuff. You didn't think about it. Talked about. There was one man. Yeah, Leopold Seifert. That was his name. He quite well known. He's quite supposed to be well. He got kicked out of Philadelphia school there. He went to Chicago and taught there for a while. I think they got fed up with him out there, and he kicked him out there, and he went somewhere else. But he was a sex pervert, I think. I know one girl there was a real good-looking gal, a real pretty girl, a real nice girl, real fine girl, came from a nice family. And he was showing her one day, you know, how to make brush strokes. And she was pretty full-breasted. He started fooling around, and you know what she did? She had a pallet full of these mahogany pallets. It was full of paints, all different kinds, you know. And a great big glob of white zinc in there. And she just took a pallet and went zoom right in his face. That was the last time he ever fooled around her.
Robert, how long ago was it that you were fooling around over there? But you were in the real estate business then. You weren't doing any farmers for cattle business.
No, but before that, Guy, when I had the cows over there, I had cows all over the place.
Oh, I didn't know you.
Oh, yeah, I ran that place for several years. I had cows all over the place. I've gone over there and dove in the doggone water over there and got a cow out and put her on the bank. Worked all night building bonfires to try and save her from pneumonia, but she died in the morning from pneumonia. That water was ice cold. Boy, And I had one old cow over there we thought the world of, old Jitterbug, crazy old thing. A wonderful old cow. Ruth and I loved that old fool. She gave us more fun and more enjoyment. Produced some real calves too, but she was the craziest cotton picking thing. We called her Jitterbug, and she used to see us coming. She'd start jitterbug.
I never heard you talk about her.
Cow, she'd throw herself over Jitterbug, and then look up at you, the crazy look on her face, and we'd say, "Well, how did I get down here?" And then you'd probably have to help her get up. Little bitty spindly leg, a great big body, you know, and she'd zoom over, she'd go. Well, old Jitterbug got sick. I built a house for her over there, Guy, and built it around her and over. And every morning and every night, I went over there for over 2 months. I fed that calf. I'd move her, so she wouldn't get bed sores. And took care of her. Finally, I think something happened here. It was a question. Oh, Mrs. Gentry got seriously ill, and it was a question of which one we take care of. We had to take care of Mrs. Gentry, so, and she was a bitch on wheels, so I poor old Jitterbug had to have her put out of the way. So, I did. Doc came down and gave her a shot. That's been 10 years ago. But, here comes someone too handy. Harry Evans had a tractor driver over there, and Harry was going to clean that whole place up, you know, mow it and run a weed chopper over. And Willie came to me and he said, Mr. Smith, you know anything about that? I said, Willie, I wouldn't ride that thing in the tractor if you paid me $1,000 a minute. He went out there with a tractor and a weed chopper guy. He made one round with that weed chopper. He didn't make a round. He got out and along this fence line, and the lake bottom started going up and down with him. He walked back.
I think.
That one right there, this morning. This car broke off too. It broke off right there. I'll clean it up when I go.
I'll be out there in the middle of something, and there's a nail break, you know, and it feels awful. He can't stop.
Oh, Johnny was out there on that tractor of Harry Evans. Johnny went back to Harry and he told him it there. He said, Mr. Evans, he said, you want dead. Me to drive that tractor out there and that and mow that lake down, break down those weeds. And Harry said, that's what I want you to do, Johnny. He said, well, I'm afraid, Mr. Evans, that you're going to have to get somebody else. Harry Evans said, what do you mean? He said, I'm through. I said, you're through. He said, don't be foolish. Don't be silly. There's nothing wrong with it. He said, Mr. Evans, he said, when that ground goes up and down like that and it rolls in front of me, he said, that's true. I ain't going out there no more. Harry said, oh, don't be silly. He said, Mr. Evans, I ain't being silly. I'm just being careful.
What is that?
Harry says, well, he said, you've been with me an awful long time. He said, I hate to see us part over that. He said, well, I'm sorry, but he said, that's the way it is. So he said, I'll be seeing you. Harry said, now you wait a little bit. Now I'll go out there and mow it and show you that there isn't anything wrong with it. Johnny said, well, I'll hang around a little bit, but that's true. I ain't going out there mowing that thing. Harry said, well, don't be silly. I'll show you that I can do it and won't be anything to it. Johnny said, if you want to, that's up to you. He said, but I ain't going out there. So Harry went out and he took the tractor and the weed chopper and behind him. Harry went around a little bit. Johnny said, Mr. Smith, he didn't fool out there very long. And he came back and he came in and he said to me, he said, Johnny, he says, I guess we'll let that go. He says, it's kind of rough out there. And Johnny said, he saw it going up and down too like that, but he said, he wouldn't admit it. He says, he's scared too.
Uh-huh.
I said, did you ever get it done? I said, no. He said, I wouldn't go out there. I said, you're crazy if you do. I said, you're nuts. I said, that you can't tell one of those darn things to go through. You can go right on through. You don't know where it is.
Well, is that one of those hammocks? What do they call them? Floating islands?
No. But you see, guy, underneath it's all honeycombed underneath there, and you don't know what minute one of those things will break and go through. He goes right on down. It's just like Ernie Prime. You remember Ernie worked for me as a carpenter for a while around here, and he built that sewage treatment plant in Gainesville. He built some homes. It's a little short, wiry, no good bastard. But he was all right for a while, but he turned out to be like a lot of other people. I don't know why they go haywire, go wrong. He's no good now, but he was all right. He was fine. But I helped Ernie get a farm, He still owes me for two pieces of machinery. He, first thing I got earning out of was the 301 ranch down in Bellevue, below Bellevue there. He was about to lose it. And we got a sale for it real fast and transfer, and we saved him some money. We didn't save all of it, but he was about to lose everything. But we saved him, I'd say, somewhere in the neighborhood of $4,000. And he would have lost it. So then he came up here, and I got him a job as a carpenter, and he worked for a while, and he worked for me. And he made good wages now, darn good wages. And his wife was a good bookkeeper, and she put the money away. And he had enough money to go up to O'Brien, up toward Live Oak, up between Branford and Live Oak, and buy a farm up there, an old run-down farm. And he went up there, and I say he was a worker. He was a worker. He'll work, and he's quick. And he talked those people into letting him have that farm up there for a very little down, and so much, 7 or 6 months or something like that. Well, Ernie was doing real good up there, and till he tried to grow some watermelons and make a killing, mm-hmm. like so many people do. So, what I was going to tell you about was this farm at O'Brien. Is a nice farm. I mean, it's just as high and hilly and nice. I mean, it wasn't just all flat, but there's one beautiful flat field out there, good pasture, and he had some cows, and he wanted to plant some soybeans. So he went out in this flat pasture, and he's going to take his harrow, and he put the harrow in an eighth notch, and he had it weighted down like he would a bush and bog, and he was tearing up this pasture. And then he was going to plant this soybeans in there and let the soybeans and the grass come up together, and he'd go along there just as if he had good sense. He had a brand new Ford, not the little Ford, but a heavier Ford tractor, and he had this disc in eighth notch in back of it. It was a big heavy disc, and he had two big bags on the racks, you know, those racks that, can't think of what I want to call them, but they're sort of boxes like. He had two big bags in there with over 100 pounds of stuff in each one to weight it down. And then now that field, guy was just at level and just looked like this. Nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, the whole front of the tractor just went down like that, and there he was looking down like this. And the wheels, when the thing went down, the motor cut off, fortunately. So the wheels just hung there. And the only thing that was holding that thing was that harrow back there. That was the only thing hold that tractor from going on down. Now the whole thing just broke through. When the tractor broke through, the rest of it there just crumbled. Just went in like that. And I'd say the hole there, 15, 20 feet in diameter. So he called me on the phone that night about it, and said, did I want to sell a farm? Are you through? He said, I'm through. And then he told me about it. Well, he sent up to Live Oak, and they sent a big D8 diesel bulldozer down there, and they hooked a couple big chains for that tractor. And the fellow with the bulldozer, when he saw what it was, he was afraid to put the bulldozer out there too close to it, so he had sent back to Live Oak and got a big piece of 3/4-inch cable and hooked onto that chain, and they pulled that tractor back. I went up there that Sunday and I looked, and guy, you could look down there and you could see the water rushing by. Just look down in there. You could see that black water just rushing by, and here was an underground stream in there. Mm-hmm. So then he took me over and he showed me by a tree, and you could stand there on the edge of this tree, look down right along the edge, wasn't but a hole about that big, but it was about 4 or 5 feet long, but it was about that wide, right alongside that tree, and you could look down in there and you could see with the sunlight and whatnot overhead, you could look down in there and you could see that water just rushing by through there. And later on, I found out that that whole section up there, in fact, the matter is up on the dining room table right now, there's a heart springs, there's a floater out now, heart springs, there's 100 acres up there for sale at $35,000. They're trying to sell it for recreation and amusement and whatnot, Heart Springs. It did belong to some religious sect. But up there, that whole countryside up there is honeycomb with these sinkholes. And you never know when one is going to develop. Just like down in the country, there's someplace down here where the houses fall in.
Yeah.
Well, that country up there, the whole darn thing is honeycomb with those
How big an area?
Oh, I'd say 6 to 10 miles in size.
Yeah.
And that scares me. I mean, I see that kind of stuff. I went over there, an old codger over there, east of O'Brien, he wanted to sell a farm over there, and he called me, and I went up and went to see him. And I said, "You got any sinkholes on your place?" He said, "Not that I know of." But he said, "Mr. Smith," he said, "one reason why I want to quit farming is I've seen too many of these things develop around here." He said, I'm getting too old. I would like to live a little while longer. I'd like to sell this place and go down south and go to the coast or go somewhere. He said, maybe get down to Clearwater or down to Palm Harbor, I think he was going to go and stay there.
How far is it? Heart Springs from
Branford?
Uh-huh.
About 10 miles.
Yeah.
Up along 20.
Well, what happened to Ernie?
Hmm?
What happened to Ernie?
He quit up there, and then he came down here and went to work for some builders, and then he went over to Williston, and then he got into, quit carpentry business and went into had that gas station up there on the Waldo Road at 8th.
Mm-hmm.
And then the damn fool, he wasn't satisfied making money at the gas station. He had to go into bootlegging.
Uh-oh.
So they caught him for bootlegging.
Uh-oh.
And he was on probation for 5 years. He paid a fine and they put him on probation for 5 years. But since then, he has turned out to be no good. I mean, he's just no good.
But he's close up. Good carpenter.
Very clever.
Hard worker.
Very.
Well, what is it, Robert?
I don't know. Maybe it's his wife. Maybe it's his wife's relatives. There's a certain amount of friction there, maybe. She's a devout Catholic and he's not. I don't know what it all is. But another thing is that she's always nagging him about money.
Yeah.
And,
well, what was he doing for you down here?
He's doing carpentry work and building for me. Anywhere I want him to go, I could send him and take him. I was going to go into contracting business.
Well, I can't place him.
I had to argue with him all the time, get him to do it the way I wanted it done.
Yeah.
And up there, he was going to help me up here with the kitchen, but I had it done. Well, he did help me put the roof on, but that's all. He was going to help me with the whole thing. I said, heck, that I would wait for him.
Well, sir, that has all just left my mind. I remember when you were fooling around with those things. That's curious.
But he was a good partner. See, you haven't gotten your telephone to call through,
haven't you? He was there. He's out. I'll come back after five. I run across these fellas who are good carpenters, got a good trade like that, you know, and can make money. And they don't seem to be able to hold on to it, and they're never satisfied. They don't quite make enough, or then they're trading around on the side so much. When they go to work, I think they're really wore out, you know. You've seen that.
That guy I was talking to, a contractor who'd been in the contracting business both in New York and in Florida, and he started in 40 years ago as a contractor. And we were talking about that very thing. Well, the first place, Ruth, I had to go see him, and she wouldn't let me drive, so she drove me over there last Sunday, a week ago, Sunday morning. I went over there, she drove me over and I talked to him. He had a fire, and he's just discouraged and disgusted. And we were talking about trades, people, I mean, craftsmen, plumbers and carpenters, electricians and painters. And I spoke to him. I said that I had at times, some of the best painters that I think were ever in this United States, and most of them were rum pots. He said, don't you think, he said, it was something to do with the trades, that fooling with alcohol and turpentine and the different things that they fooled. He said, don't you think that made them, and this man is a very devout Christian, and he didn't believe in smoking or drinking or cursing or a doggone thing, you know, he's very strict religious man. But he said, I hired him, and he said, I found the same thing that you did. He said, most of them, he said, would drink. He said, they'd get drunk Saturday night. He said, you didn't know whether they'd be there Monday morning or not. Mm-hmm. He said, 9 times out of 10, he said, they'd come in, they'd be half tight.
Yeah.
I spoke about that, and I spoke about the carpenters. He said, a lot of the carpenters were also rummy, that, you know, drink over the weekend. Mm-hmm. And, he said he didn't know why. Plumbers weren't quite so bad, and electricians weren't quite so bad, because an electrician got drunk too often and started pulling hot wire, he wouldn't live very long.
Yeah.
But a carpenter, a carpenter could stagger around on a scaffold and somehow looking after him, or something looked after him anyhow. But I have noticed that, well, in the furniture business guy, the cabinet makers, ordinarily, one of the best cabinet makers I ever had, old Tom O'Neill. They pay him off for Saturday at noontime. You know, then we worked a 54-hour work week. We didn't work a 40-hour week.
Mm-hmm. That's my difference. That's my difference.
Yeah. And a Saturday noontime, I paid Tom off. And Tom would say, well, you better hold on $20. But it's a matter of time, you going to go get drunk again tonight? I don't intend to now. I don't intend to. I said, well, if you do, you know where home is. He was 73 years old, but you wouldn't know it. And he'd been the superintendent of the Belvedere Mail Works for years. Had had a very responsible job, but he had a wife that was a bitch on wheels. Even her children said she was. And the children used to thank Ruth and I for taking care of him. And so, Tom would go out and get drunk. Of course, I'd hold out some of the money so that I could pay his landlady and have some money for next week. But he'd invariably get drunk. And then we'd have to take care of him Saturday night, Sunday, sober him up for Monday. I had another man, an upholsterer, one of the best upholsterers you'd ever want to meet. And Tom would go to town. His name was Tom German. His brother was the chief of police of Baltimore for years. Tom German was a better man you'd never find in this world. Fine person. He'd had a disastrous marriage. He started to drink, and boy, he was an alcoholic, as there ever was. He'd get so sloppy drunk. Bring him in, pour him in bed. And we had a place for him. We had a room there. We had rooms out back by the shop where we could house four men. So if Tom would come in and we'd take him out there. Or he'd stumble around and somebody pick him up, take him out there. Pour him in bed. But the better mechanics.
Mm-hmm. Printers used to do that.
Old printers.
Printers.
He used to stand out in front of by the linotype machine and he'd throw lead at me. He'd say, hey, it's tight. And he would know, you know, take these little pieces of lead. Boom! Say, all right. His name was Jimmy Duffy. Jimmy used to throw that lead at me and I'd get a pile of lead.
Robert, let me tell you, I got to go and you got to get busy.
I got nothing to
do. Let me tell you. When you come here and you put your line through here, you couldn't see any of the country. Here's all growing.
Couldn't see anything.
Yeah. Now, tell me about that. How did you open up the line there?
Oh, Horace Hall had a Nellis Chalmers tractor.
Yeah.
And he came here and he put a little roller on his 4 foot
wheat choppers.
We filled it up with water.
Yeah.
And hooked that on back of it. And you couldn't see the barn standing up there on the old steps. You couldn't see the barn. You didn't know there was a barn there.
Yes.
And in fact, the matter is, there's one guy here in town, he's not here anymore, stole me blind, and he was only 30 feet away, and I couldn't see him.
Yeah.
Oh, but he could quote scripture to you. Whew, he could quote the Bible frontwards, backwards, and inside out. And he's the biggest crook. But anyway, Horace came here, and Horace said, Bob, do you know where the corners are? I said, hell no, Horace, I don't know nothing about this place. He said, you've never been over there. I said, no, I don't even know where the corners are. He said, well, you know what, down this field? I said, I told you, I don't know a thing about it. He said, well, let's find out. And Horace Hull, in Ocala, was in charge of soil conservation at that time down there. Horace and his wife, very, very fine people. Horace took that Alice Chalmers, and he started out from there, and he went across here. And right down here where these, right in the middle of the road down here, where these pecan trees are, where you got your sign, mm-hmm. over to the, over about the middle of the road, there was had been a big live oak tree, and there had been a house there. There was a beautiful well there. Oh, it was a wonderful well. And that was there, and that was one of the old Mary houses, except when old Boyd had it, and he had it still in it. Alcohol and it exploded one day and they were eating.
And that's the end of the house.
Supper, I think. And then we either eating dinner at noontime or supper. Homemade Hannah told me about it. Well, let's say some of the glass that was melted in that fire. Hot! Holy cat, I bet that thing was hot. All ran together and you could pick up globs of it, you know.
Yeah.
And all pretty colors on. I should say so. Funny how Horace got down in here and his trees were down. And he couldn't see where he was going. He was just going blindly ahead, you know. And here he had this darn weed shop from back then. And you could hardly back up a weed shop.
Yeah.
You know that.
That's the end of that little session. I don't know what happened to break it off, but it was broken off. And when we come back in, here's a new subject.
But they had just flooded us on that back.
That power failure, where they, not long ago, that when it stayed off way under too long.
Before I go home, I want you to tell me just in a word, so I won't bother you so much. How did you figure out that when that electricity went off, that they had just flooded us on that hurricane.
We mean when they pulled those jacks?
Yeah.
Well, what was, guy? I left here.
I was over there unsuspecting all the time, just sitting there, reading by kerosene lamp. Yeah.
Well, what made me so sure about it?
Not using my head at all.
I went up here and I found out. I kept waiting for them to put the power on. Well, if they didn't have any power down in Orange Lake or McIntosh or Micanopy, that was all right. I wait. But I heard they had power on up in Micanopy. Well, now they have power on in Micanopy, I should have power on here, because the power supported coming that way up this way. So I couldn't figure out how they could get it to Micanopy and not get it here unless they had pulled a jack somewhere. And that was Saturday. So I called them on the phone. Well, first, let me back up. All right. I called on the phone and they told me down there, whoever it was, that I would have, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I would have power here by 4 o'clock.
They're telling everybody that, weren't they?
And I told them, I said, well, now look, we have a lot of perishable merchandise here. As Mrs. Smith has this candy business, a lot of perishable merchandise. And I said, if we don't get it, I have to make some other arrangement. Oh, you'll have it by 4 or 5 o'clock.
So you took it easy.
So I took their word for it and didn't do anything, see.
Yeah.
So then I found out afterwards they didn't do anything and nothing came on, no lights came on, nothing. So I found out that Micanopy had light. They had power. And we didn't. So Sunday morning, first thing I did was I took the car and I drove up toward Micanopy. Well, when I pulled up toward Micanopy, I saw where they pulled the 3 jacks down off of that. I knew there were 3 jacks on that line there, or this primary line that goes down here. I wanted to see what was there, so I looked up there and these 3 jacks were pulled. Well, why should they pull those 3 jacks? That's one thing I couldn't understand, the 3 switches, they call them jacks.
Mm-hmm.
Went in and found out Micanopy had had power since Saturday afternoon. That made me mad. So I went down to the power company down there. I tried to get them on the telephone. And they couldn't get anybody Sunday morning on the telephone. And finally, the manager's mother-in-law, I guess it was, told me on the telephone that I have to go to the office. So I went to the office. Couldn't get a hold of the manager. So I went down to the office. And that
she did try to do her best on that, didn't she? I don't know about it.
But I went down to the office, and the woman down there who'd been there too daggone long.
Yeah.
Nasty, arrogant, sarcastic.
Yeah.
And she made me mad. And she started telling me this was the worst hurricane that ever hit here, and not a bunch of bunk. I said, you can't tell me that. I said, I've been here too long, and I've been in every hurricane. I said, bad one since 1924. I said, you don't know what a hurricane is. I said, that wasn't no hurricane. That wasn't even a good windstorm. You don't know what you're talking about. I said, yeah, I know what I'm talking about, but I said, one thing I want to know, but and I haven't got the answer yet, is I said, did Mr. Franklin have so much money and so much political pull that he can get electricity on and I can't? She said, that hasn't got anything to do with it. I said, I think it has. I intend to find out, too. She said, well, you go ahead. I said, well, he must have some political pull. No, we had to bring that electricity in from Gainesville. I said, well, why didn't you bring it all the way down the line? We couldn't. I said, why couldn't you? She said, because there are 300 trees down. I said, that's a bunch of bunk, too. There are no 300 trees down, because I just came down the road and there are no trees down. Well, there are. There's 300 of them down in Boardman. I said, oh, baloney. I said, I guess if all of them, that stuff, I said, several thousand dollars worth of merchandise goes bad up there, you'll say it's an act of God. I said, well, when you say it's an act of God, I'm going to take you all into court, and we'll see who God is. Oh, that made me mad. And she said, well, it is an act of God. I said, it is not. It's just poor management and damn stupidity. That's what it is. She said, well, that's what you think. I said, I don't want to think it. I know it. I'll tell it to anybody. Just damn poor management. She said, you want to tell it to the manager? I said, I'd be happy to. Is he here? No, he isn't here. I said, well, when I see him, I'll tell him. I said, no use me staying here talking to you. I said, I know what I'll do. I'll go home and I'll call up St. Petersburg. That's what I'll do. See if we can't get some action from down there. She said, I'm sorry you feel the way you do, but she said, we can't help it. I said, you sure can help it. And I walked out. So I got up here, and of course I went around, and I couldn't find any tree there. There was one tree down there in Richardson's pasture. It had fallen across the line down there. Well, guy, it wouldn't take him any time at all to get up on the, climb the pole. If it wasn't wet, they could climb that pole. Even if it was wet, they could climb it. And they could take a pair of switch sticks and they could cut those wires and let the juice come to that pole. You call it square. But no, what they did was, because of Franklin's mill, because of Ben Franklin, they ran them, they told me that they were paying for the electricity out of Gainesville to bring it down here to Micanopy. They brought it down on the main line down here to Franklin's and pulled it into Franklin's mill and then the city of the town of Micanopy. Well, in order not to bring it on down here and let us people have it down here because they were buying it from Gainesville, see, and it was costing them as much money as they'd get out of us. You see, if they were paying Gainesville 5 cents and selling to us for three, they didn't want to do that to accommodate us or give us service. Uh-uh, that was beyond them. They'd pull the three jacks there and cut you and I and Hilton Heron and everybody else off. So, it was Sunday and Harriet called up. And Harriet said, do you have any electricity up there? And Ruth, we were calling people on the phone. And I was just about to call Lorene Lane down Clearwater. Now, Joe, Lorene's husband, is the president of the Bank of Clearwater down there. Lorene's been with the Florida Power Corporation for 28 years. And she's very well liked, very well thought of, and she knows everybody from top to bottom. And they've been very close friends of ours for a good many years. Well, Lorene was in here last Saturday afternoon for an hour and a half. She and her mother and her daughter were in here talking to Ruth and sitting in here for an hour and a half last Saturday afternoon. And I was about to call Lorene up when Harriet called up. Harriet said, Hilton has run the whole line and he can find no trees down. Nothing to interfere with us having electricity except that they pulled those jacks up there at the railroad. I said, yeah, because they told me, I said, this was just a secondary line and they wouldn't put the electricity through here except on the main line. And so Harriet said, Hilton says it is not, it's a primary line, and so therefore we ought to have the juice and there's no reason for them to pull those three jacks. I said, no, there wasn't a bit. I said, they've had electricity down there in Orange Lake and McIntosh. And they've had it there Saturday, and I said, here we are, Sunday afternoon.
Where did they get that?
They brought it in from down the road, but they didn't send it on up. They didn't send it up here.
You know, I think the telephone company's the same way. they, you can have all sorts of poor service, but your bill goes on just the same.
Exactly.
Oh, they load up these party lines? Something awful out here. You got to be there at the time of the day everybody else is working, and then you can get anybody you want. And then they get the receivers off.
Mm-hmm. And then you get a busy signal.
Yeah. And you can go half a day.
Hilton and Harriet called, and she called him up down there, and she got a hold of that woman down there. Well, Hilton went down there, and he had a fight with her. And he wasn't very nice about it either, and he was mad, and he was going to do something. So Harriet, she called her on the phone, and Harriet got it. And Harriet don't mind telling anybody off, so she called her off. And she told her that she was going to get some action, she's going to get action day and fast. So this woman down there must have given her some lip. She said, well, you'll find out. So she went to work and called up Turlington, Ralph Turlington, and told her what lousy service and what a glory, and, you know, what we were getting from those people down there, and what poor treatment, and all these lies, and all this stuff. And Harriet just put it on the line. So Charlie said, well, Harriet, he said, I'm awful sorry to hear you're having this trouble. He said, I'll call him up and see what I can do. He said, now, I'm not going to promise I can do anything, but he said, I'll call up and see what I can do. And Harriet said, well, I know if you tell him who you are, she said, you'll get better treatment than I do, and I have, or Mr. Smith or Mrs. Smith. And he said, well, who are that, Bob and Ruth Smith? And Ruth has a candy shop? And she said, yeah. And he said, you mean to tell me that Ruth's there was suffering with no electricity and all that perishable merchandise? She says, not only that, she said, Bob had to go up to Gainesville and pay a terrific amount of money to get dry ice in order to try and keep it, but he can't keep it with dry ice very long because he can't get any more dry ice. And they're giving him a run around, and they were nasty to him. He said, let me see what I can do, and I'll call you back in 15 minutes. So he called her back in 15 minutes. He said, Harriet, I think they went to school together. I don't know. Anyhow, they called, and she called him Ralph, and he calls her Harriet. He said, Harriet, he said, I talked to those people down there. And he said, they have definitely promised me that you will have service this afternoon. And I said, if you don't get it in a reasonable length of time, he said, will you call me back? So she said, I'll call them back. He said, I'll see. He said, we get it some more of a runaround or not. He said, I don't know whether we're going to. But he said, if you get service, will you call me? If you don't get service, call me. She said, I'll do that, Ralph. So then, oh, in no time at all, I saw these trucks flying up the road here. Two of them going up here.
All right.
And then I saw one of them going back. And it wasn't long before the lights came on.
I'll tell you.
I waited when Harry called up, and Harry told me. I waited, and I said, well, I won't call Lorraine up. And I said also, if it was the president had, well, Hines, of course, the vice president down there, Hines, comes from High Springs. He's born and raised up in High Springs. He's a local boy.
Now, this is almost the end of the tape. I'll have to transfer it now. This is the end of Channel 1 Right. The end of Channel 1 Right, but I have 20 or 30 minutes, maybe more, on the other side of this first long tape with a new system with Roberts. Tuesday, the 11th of March, 1969, and this is the end of Channel 1 Right on the new reel, Roberts.